Good morning.
Good morning.
When I woke up to raindrops pelting my window Friday morning, I took it as a good omen for worship today, this service in honor of Earth Day. I chuckled and said to myself, oh, the worship gods, they must be pleased with Star King UU Church. That expression, you know, the gods of fill in the blank, it's something that actually comes from my father. My father was raised Unitarian Universalist in upstate New York. And like many UUs of his generation, he identifies as a humanist atheist with favorable inclinations towards Buddhist philosophy. Do some of you identify with that? Now, both my mother and father were deeply committed to their children's education. Getting their kids a good education was a primary mission of theirs for a solid 25 years. Our education was the thing to which they oriented their lives. And like anyone with a clear purpose, they made many sacrifices for that goal. And their commitment and those sacrifices fill that metaphorical well, which I draw from every single day. So you can understand that applying to college was a really big deal. And once my college applications were in, my father did something I wouldn't have necessarily expected my humanist atheist father to do. He started visiting the chapel of a nearby university campus. Not a university I applied to, just to be clear. A historic landmark, the chapel was built in the 1870s in this Gothic Revival style. It was a brick building with pointed arches, stained glass windows, a castle-like tower, and a steeply pitched roof. And inside this particular chapel, well, it has this well-known tile mosaic featuring life-size, white-robed, Greek god-like figures. Except rather than Zeus or Athena or Aphrodite, what you would find was a throned man slash god named Philosophy. And that throned man was surrounded by similarly white-robed Greek god-like figures named Biology, Astronomy, Physics, and Music. And my father would go visit the chapel and sit in a contemplative silence, looking up at that grand mosaic of imposing Greek god-like figures. He later shared with me, with kind of a wry chuckle and a not-so-subtle sense of irony and some self-mocking, that he liked to think of the man on the throne as the god of college admissions. I think these short visits were his way of doing something that some might call prayer. He had spent 20 years working and sacrificing for his family, but at that moment, it was all out of his hands. To this day, when something is going on in our lives that is big and important, and out of our hands, I will ask my dad to go pray to the gods of whatever. Having knee surgery? Please pray to the god of knee surgeons. Looking for a place to live? Please pray to the gods of housing. These past months, if not years for some, I suspect that some of us might have been praying to the gods of rain, so to speak. Perhaps those of you who are gardeners, I think about Terry Owen, or farmers like Daryl and Renee, maybe you have found a place like that university chapel, a place to go to simply be with the fact that something so important to you, something you have dedicated your life to, something your life fundamentally depends on, is almost completely out of your control. It is hard being human. Now, if you had to pick the most popular of our seven UU principles, which one would you choose? What would you choose? What? Number seven, the interdependent web. Okay. Number one, inherent worth and dignity. Mm-hmm. That is seven. Mm-hmm. Is this when I have to tell you that I actually can't recite the seven principles off the top of my head? Cheaters. Yes. Number three, okay. Well, I've actually heard it said that most Unitarian Universalists, well, we know our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and we know our seventh, the respect for the interdependent web of all existence. And then there's some stuff in between. And of course, around Earth Day, we talk a lot about the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web. Interdependency is kind of such a nice philosophical word. I think one that's kind of easy to wax poetic about. We are all connected. We need one another more than we know. The grand interdependent web of life. But you know what? Webs do not just connect things. Webs are the things that you can get caught in. And this word interdependency, well, isn't it merely the word dependency with a prefix? And I don't know about you, and while interdependency sounds philosophical and safe, dependency sounds slightly terrifying. Given my recent knee injury and surgery, I have gotten pretty well acquainted with dependency. And you know what? Dependency can kind of stink. Don't get me wrong, these past months have allowed the generosity and compassion of many folks to shine. Care packages of delicious cheese and fruit. Thank you, Walt and Levon. Gift cards for coffee and milkshakes, which I believe are the true healing elixirs of our time. Friends took out my garbage and would do a store run to get me straws so that while I was having to lie down in the passive motion machine that moves my knee back and forth for 6 hours a day, they got me straws so I could drink the milkshakes and the coffee. I have felt profound gratitude and love. And I have experienced new levels of frustration. I've developed a new level of empathy for toddler temper tantrums. Because if there is a group of humans that are experts on the state of dependency, it is our children. It can be so frustrating being dependent on others for basic day-to-day needs. The stomp your feet, pound your fists, kind of frustrating. Here, stomp your feet. Pound your fists. Yes. I bet scientist Richard Weatherald has wanted to stomp his feet and pound his fists quite a bit these past 40 years. Weatherald was one of the scientists in the 1960s and 70s, who produced research showing the high likelihood, if not outright certainty, about the impacts of pollution, the trend of global warming, and impending resource scarcity. And in fact, I read recently that most of the most substantial parts of research around climate change were conducted in the 1970s. And so that means for the past 40 years, Weatherald and his colleagues have had to bear witness to a world, to governments and the people that make them up, have had to bear witness to these people largely ignoring what they knew to be true and real and had strong scientific research to support. That industrial and consumer activity pumping CO2 into the environment had begun warming the planet. And that should our Earth warm a total of 2 degrees Celsius above what the climate was pre-industrial revolution, the world and its people would experience calamitous effects, polar ice cap melting, rise in sea levels, atypical weather patterns like severe droughts. Weatherald asks, what is the point of science if we cannot get people to act on it? You do your part, you do what's right, but gosh darn it, we are not just interdependent, we are dependent. Stomp your feet, pound your fists, temper tantrum kind of dependent. All the most rigorous and reliable scientific research and evidence did not move people to act quickly. And here I must confess that despite the drought conditions of the past 4 years, it took me until recently with the official drought announcement to finally do what they recommend for showering, where you turn off the faucet between shampooing and lathering. I, a highly educated liberal activist type, I had knowledge, but that was not sufficient for action. And how frustrating for myself, looking at myself. And I can imagine that scientist Richard Weatherald might really like to read me the riot act. He might really like to stomp his feet and pump his fists at me. And who could blame him? Our reading this morning from Akira Kurosawa's film Yume, well, that reading is pretty harsh on scientists. But given that Kurosawa had lived through the atomic bombing of Japan, I can certainly understand a cynicism about scientists, for it was scientists and their technology that birthed the atomic bomb. But I think we know that scientists do far more than only invent things that make people unhappy. Like Richard Weatherald, there are scientists who have dedicated their lives to trying to show us how much we need nature, how precious and invaluable clean air and water are to our living. But while the scientific method produces knowledge that is absolutely essential to our well-being, my friends, science is not enough. The scientific method alone will not save us from the creeping climate change, the rising sea levels, the severe droughts, or the polar vortexes. Kurosawa expresses so clearly how easily we forget that we humans and our science are not outside or above the rivers, mountains, winds, trees, and oceans. We and our science are part of and dependent on the natural elements. We are part of a great interdependent web of life, a web that is getting stickier and stickier, a web that we are all getting more and more caught up in. As the sea levels rise, our wells are beginning to run dry. Today, if we were building a chapel, like the chapel that my father visited on a university hill, I think about what would be the tile mosaic we should build. What would be the image we would want people to focus on and revere? What saving message would we embed in the chapel walls? I certainly would not choose looming human godlike figures in white robes carrying scrolls and sitting on thrones in the sky. We do not need to be looking up at the heavens. We need to be looking down at the earth, the dirt, the trees, and the crops, and the water that nurtures it all. I think I would choose a mosaic that started with a huge, huge green and blue earth. So the whole wall, just imagine a huge earth. And in the middle of the earth, I think I would make a really big river, maybe like a third of the size of the mosaic, running through the middle of it, connecting to the sea and the north and south poles. And then I think I'd have really big trees, like a fifth of the size of the whole mosaic, lining the riverbank. And then along that riverbank, there would be three clearings. And in one clearing, I think I'd put a farm. and then perhaps really tiny, barely perceptible stick figures of people working the land. And in the second clearing, there would be a tall office building representing the city. And then in the third clearing, what do you think I would put in a third clearing? What would a minister want to make sure to include in her tile mosaic? Oh, excellent! Great! So glad you suggested it. Yes, a religious congregation, a church. Because I think church is where science can get transformed into human will. I think church is where abstract knowledge becomes embodied into the stories that inspire and motivate us. And church is the place where you can stomp your feet and pound your fists, and at least you don't do it alone. And then church is where you can come to sit when you have done all you can, when you need to replenish your own spiritual, personal well and find peace in accepting that which is out of your hands. In the UN climate change report released a few weeks ago, there was some depressing news, like how global greenhouse gas emissions have risen more rapidly in the past 10 years than in each of the three previous decades. But there was also hope. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change also said that it is still possible, we still have time, if we humans can muster the motivation and will to avert the more serious consequences of climate change. There is still time. Our wells may be running low, but they are not dry yet. Only wise action taken by communities of organized people, people that are neither bogged down by denial or depression, nor running wild in frenzied reactive fear. Only wise, compassionate action taken by wise, compassionate people can save us now. And may we, us gathered here at Star King Church, may we be such a people. I'd like to close with an excerpt, actually, from a meditation that the children are doing in their religious exploration class today. It is part of Thich Nhat Hanh's pebble meditation. So if you would, get comfortable. Close your eyes if you would like. And take a big, deep belly breath in and out. Imagine water, still water. A pond, a lake. Still water can reflect the sky, the clouds, the mountains. Still water is wonderful. When the water is still, it can reflect things as they are. It does not distort things. Be still water. When we are still water, we do not have wrong views or misunderstandings about things inside and outside of us. That is why we breathe in and breathe out mindfully. We can still ourselves. We can calm ourselves. We make the still water apparent within us. Still water is within you. When the water in you is still, you are calm. You are serene. You see things clearly as they are. You do not distort things. You do not have wrong perceptions. It is wonderful. When we are still water, we see clearly, exactly as things are. Breathing in, feel yourself as still water. Breathing out, reflect things as they truly are. Blessed be, and amen.